Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing here?
Well, it's... We're at a nice little roundish 10 episodes of Second Maccabees.
Sure as fuck are.
And it's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Which means that today we're doing...
Q&A Saturday.
That's right.
And it's on a Saturday.
That's also right.
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're doing... This is like two times in a row of doing Q&As where it landed on a Saturday.
I know.
It's like we did it on purpose or something.
I mean... Again. It happened good.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
So what do you got for us today? Like, what are we going to be going over exactly?
We're covering 2 Maccadoodles, chapter 6 through 10.
Okay.
Right. Because we were like... What?
Yeah.
And I mean, some of it we got because it just like recapped Hanukkah, but like there were more golden horses with, you know, Greek god chariot things.
Yeah. Yeah. And
people, worms.
Right. Right. Yeah. People with rotting flesh and worms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was good stuff.
Yes.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
God was a dick again.
And I mean, always, you know, I just. God was still a dick.
Gotta make sure I threw that in there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, you ready to dig into this Q&A?
Sure as fuck am.
All right. Let's do this.
Okie dokie. All right. We are here hopping into 2 Maccadoodles Q&A.
Yeah.
Chapter 6 through 10.
Okay.
Because what the fuck?
I mean,
worms and Zeus.
Right. And golden horses and stuff.
Yeah.
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 Right.
So just to give you like an overview and then I'll like tell you basically what happened in each chapter.
Okay.
Here's the overview. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
These chapters in particular overlap a lot with 1 Maccabees chapters 1 through 4.
Sure.
Okay. But 2 Maccabees tells it in way more dramatic, theological, and martyrdom heavy way.
More.
Yeah.
Way
yeah.
more.
Like so much martyrdom too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we forgot even to mention in the intro the mom and her 7 sons.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, that was crazy.
So much martyrdom happening
yeah.
here. It's yeah, they not just believe, they will die before they eat the
they
pork.
They so fucking believed.
And they will get tortured all the fuck in front of each other.
They believe more than anybody believed ever before.
They were the,
and ever since.
They were the believiest believers. They put evangelical Christians to shame.
They didn't stop believing.
They did not stop believing.
No.
That song is so good. Hold on to that feeling. Okay. Also, Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, you know, my OG villain.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm like so in love with him. He's like my Ursula from Little Mermaid, or like, you know, Cruella from 101 Dalmatians.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I just, he's my OG villain. I love a villain.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Like, I know you're not supposed to say that, obviously. Right. Like, he's the bad guy. He's horrible. You're not supposed to like the bad guy. That's like saying you like Hitler. I don't like Hitler. Jesus Christ.
Right, yeah.
Why am I like, he's my OG villain?
Because he comes up so much.
He does. And, like, okay, you know what it is for me? It's his name.
Antiochus?
Antiochus Epiphanes.
Yeah, yeah.
Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes.
Right.
I mean, oh my God, that name. So he intensifies his persecution of the Jews,
sure.
which that's not good.
No.
So, I mean, I don't love that about him. It's mostly just his name I like.
Right.
The Jews were forced to abandon the Torah. Because Antiochus came in and was like, I will kill you if you don't.
Yeah.
And be Greek or die. I mean,
that's what a lot of people would consider forcing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. See, at the time I was thinking of the mother and the 7 sons.
Sure.
And I was like, forced? I mean...
Well, sure, you can choose to die.
Well, yeah. That, and they did.
But that's not... That we talked about this back then. Yeah. That's not much of a choice, and we would definitely not choose to die.
Yeah.
So it would be more... For most normal people, it would be a forcing of not... worshiping their god.
Yeah.
You know, like they can't,
you're right.
They
you're
can't
right.
practice it. They don't have temples to go to. It's just like, we're going to put that shit on pause because, you know, death.
I'm going to not die today.
Right.
I'm going to live to worship another day.
I don't want to be fried up.
I think that my god is so cool. He totally gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're me and him, we're good.
My god fucks. So, These five chapters cover the martyrdoms. We've got Eleazar, which I think we completely forgot about him, but he was the old man that was like, I'll die first.
Right, right.
And then right after that story, then we get the mother and the seven sons.
Yeah.
And she tells each one of them, go ahead and die first.
From the old man right to the frying pan.
Oh my God. Like literally for the dudes. Like they literally got burned to death
I know.
So yeah. Judas Maccabeus starts his guerrilla warfare resistance.
Yeah.
And then the Seleucid generals fucking get wrecked, like all over the board.
Yeah.
And then Antiochus IV dies, which he got worms.
Fucking horrible.
He got explosive diarrhea.
Man, now what a way to go.
Mm-hmm. And apparently his skin fell off.
I would love to know if that's actually true or if that was just like... embellished. Like,
I want to know how Antiochus IV Epiphanes died.
Right. Is there actual like documentation of that? Or is it like that
Did
would be
his
something
skin
I would be,
really
that
fall
would be
off,
something
y'all.
I'd be very like other than the Bible. Like I gotta say, when I'm listening to you read Second Maccabees, mm-hmm. it's very embellished.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like it was written in the moment.
No.
So
no.
I feel like it's
It doesn't count.
Questionable as to whether things are true-ish.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's so biblical. It doesn't count as historical. Like if things didn't actually happen, it's incidental.
Mm.
The fact that it's in the Bible is like not proof that it happened.
No,
it's merely that shit got recorded along with a bunch of other bullshit.
Right. Like my guess is that somebody who said and it passed down like through the game of telephone or whatever. Like that he had diarrhea and then it just turned into his flesh was rotting and his bowels were
God
oozing
gave
out
him worms
and all kinds of shit. So
but the skin falling off.
Right. No, I mean it was bad.
And so then later on towards the end, the temple is repurified and rededicated and that's the origin of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Which again we did read about that in First Maccabees.
Very briefly.
Well, yeah.
But read about it because we did a Q&A and we found out that that's what that was.
Right.
They did cover it somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So
those are things that happened.
Yeah.
Those are all things that happened in chapters 6 through 10.
Sure.
But let's talk about each chapter individually a little bit more.
Okay.
Because, you know, why not?
That's what
we're here for.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so in chapter 6, we've got forced Hellenization. Like... That's right. the Greek, be Greek with me.
Yeah, that's back when we were talking about like them getting they put their foreskins back on and shit like that,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
Yep, the gymnasiums were built.
Right, yeah.
And that's what was the big deal about the foreskins and the the nudity.
Yeah.
And you can't be naked if you're Jewish because then everybody's going to see that your wiener doesn't have the correct skinage and you're going to be so embarrassed.
Right. And they'd even like execute mothers if they didn't get their kids circumcised.
Yep. Then this chapter is also where we had Eleazar's martyrdom.
Okay.
So in chapter 6, Antiochus forces Jews to abandon the Torah. He desecrates the temple. He bans Jewish practice. And Eleazar refuses pork and dies rather than fake compliance.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
King Antiochus IV Epiphanes sends an official, an Athenian senator or envoy, to force Jews to abandon ancestral law. And the crackdown escalates hard.
Ancestral law?
That's what I said.
So you said ancestral. It sounded like you said ancestral law.
No, ancestor.
Okay. I just want to make sure. The way it sounded to me, it was way too close to ancestral.
Not ancestral. Ancestral.
Got it. Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
But there's an R in there.
I was, yeah. I
it's
was just,
not incest.
I was
it's
just making
ancestor.
Sure that that's what we were talking about.
Yes, that is what we're talking about.
Okay.
So the temple in Jerusalem again, is rededicated to the Olympian Zeus.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Olympian Zeus.
Very. I mean, that's cool.
That's why we...
I like... Zeus is cool.
Zeus is cool, but that's...
lightning bolts, although apparently Yahweh's got lightning bolts, too.
Only because Zeus had them. He never had those, and now all of a sudden, he got some. Come on. Tell me that the Greeks didn't get under your skin.
Yeah. Well, no, right? He did have lightning bolts that one time that he killed Uzzah for touching the ark.
Mm.
Justice for Uzzah, remember?
All right.
He shot him with a lightning bolt.
Was it a lightning bolt or was it electricity? Or
what other kind of electricity would have been?
I'm just saying, I didn't think it was a lightning bolt. I could be wrong.
Okay.
You're probably right.
All right.
It's just, that's the only time we've heard about lightning bolts. Mostly it's smoke.
I'm just saying.
Mostly it's burning bushes, smoke, a column.
I will say it's not his thing. Like, there's not a lot of lightning.
Whereas it's very much Zeus's thing. Right. You know, he's the fucking god of thunder and whatnot.
It's very, you know, questionable that it's coming up in the middle of them being
all of a sudden,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, Antiochus is like, Greece is awesome. And so they rededicate the temple to Olympian Zeus. The sanctuary on Mount Gerizim, which is in the Samaria and Samaritan region, that gets dedicated to Zeus as well.
Mm.
The temple gets turned into a fucking desecrated mess.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got pagan sacrifices, sexual debauchery in sacred spaces like Christmas trees galore come out. You know, everybody bring your Asherah poles back out. We've got forbidden foods, you know, with the pork.
Sure.
All that stuff comes out.
Yeah.
And the Jews are forbidden to keep the Sabbath or to celebrate their festivals or to even openly identify as Jews.
They couldn't even display their showbread.
No, they had to put their showbread on non-show days. They couldn't show it at all. Breads and wieners, way off.
Yeah.
Could not show any of that shit.
Right.
And people were forced into pagan civic cult rituals. Like, they had to celebrate the king's birthday by giving sacrifices and stuff. Like, what the fuck is that?
I mean, if you're in charge, you just make people do it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Trump says.
Yeah. So. If you're a star, they just let you do
it. Right, yeah.
Yeah. There was a Dionysus procession with ivy wreaths.
Okay.
Dionysus is the Greek guy who's the same as the Roman Bacchus.
Okay.
And that's where you get, like, your orgies and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was the wine and fuck party orgy god.
Got it.
Yeah, he went hard, one might say. Yeah, yeah. And so they were celebrating all of that stuff. I mean, sounds like a good time, except for it was probably rapey, so not a good time,
right,
is my guess.
Sure.
Like, if it was all consensual and fun, it sounds like a good time.
Right.
I mean, hypothetically.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. But there were some horrific examples of things that happened. Like you said, women were executed for circumcising their infants.
Yeah.
Anybody got a clue about it? They would pull that baby's wiener out and look at it. And they would be like, nope, bitch, you and your baby are dead now. You don't get to do that.
That's crazy.
Like, I have such mixed feelings, like, doing that to a baby is kind of gross. Now we understand, like, hey, let's not cut off the foreskin.
Yeah, but that's not the same as murdering people.
Right.
Over, you know?
Like, no, I know. That's why I'm like...
We don't murder people because they do it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. When I said mixed feelings, I just meant, like, you basically did a surgical torture of your child. That's bad. Okay, I agree with you. So now we're going to kill you guys. Wait, no, hold on. That escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Like, we just went from bad to worse.
Right.
That's what I meant by mixed feelings.
Sure, sure.
The people were burned in caves for keeping the Sabbath secretly.
Hmm.
Like, they would go party in their caves,
right,
you know, like the teenagers do today.
Sure.
Like, you know, teenagers always be partying in caves,
right?
All the
time. Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. They go to the beach and they party in the beach caves.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And every time you go be walking around caves, you find beer cans and used condoms.
That's the way it goes.
And drug needles. There's always drug needles.
Every fucking time.
Every fucking time. When's the last time you've been to a beach or a beach cave?
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
I don't know that I've ever been to a beach cave.
I've been to a beach cave, but it's definitely been a couple of decades.
Yeah.
All right, so in all of this, then comes Eleazar, okay? He's an elderly scribe, so he's an old man.
Yeah.
He's very respected and advanced in age. He's an old Jewish scribe, and he's very respected by his friends who are the Greeks who are not Jewish, but they're all friends. They've been friends forever.
Right.
And they're like, dude, you need to eat pork so that you can, like, fit in. Come on.
Yeah.
And his friends offer him a compromise. If you just fake it, just like pretend, like they'll bring lawful meat so that it looks like they're totally willing to cover for him.
Yeah.
Cause they like this guy. He's cool. Sure, they're like, sure. We don't want you to die. We're not going to rat you out that it's fake. Just, you know, go along to get along so that we don't get in trouble with you. And so that we don't have to report you. Like right. If anybody asks, we can be like, no, he totally ate pork. But he refused because it would dishonor him in his heart, in his soul. And it would mislead younger Jews into apostasy.
Sure.
And he was like, I got to set the example.
Right.
If I'm not willing to walk the walk, then I should not be talking the talk. And I mean, he chose torture and death rather than hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you should always pick hypocrisy over torture and death. I mean, I feel like in those circumstances, just pick hypocrisy, my guy.
It's easy to say when we don't, like, we kind of talked about this too. It's easy for us to say when we don't believe in a God.
Right.
You know, but
I'm trying to think what would make me be like.
But we kind of talked about this too. And it's like, if it was our kids or something like that, that would be different, right? Like, that would be something that we might, that might bring us to that point, right? But now,
renounce science.
Well,
like, okay, fine. Science is fake.
No, I would totally renounce science.
God is great. Yahweh is awesome. Bring on the fish or what the fuck ever.
I mean, I wouldn't, obviously not in my heart, but you know.
Right. But I don't believe anyway, so it's not a problem.
Yeah. But if it came, I don't know.
If there was a threat against somebody that I love, obviously, yeah, but they would understand that I'm saying things to save their life.
Sure.
And they're not going to be mad at me for it.
My thoughts, even if I did believe, would be like, my God's going to understand that I just don't want to die. Like, come on, this is stupid. Why would I just die?
I don't want my child or myself to die, and any God I choose to believe in, because it is a choice.
Right.
You do get to choose what God you believe in.
Yeah, they'll be okay with it.
Yeah. So the main characters in chapter 6 are Antiochus the 4th Epiphanes. He's the Seleucid king and the chief villain.
Right.
Eleazar, he's the elderly scribe and the model martyr. You're supposed to respect and look up to him.
Got it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
There's the Athenian envoy and the senator, and they are enforcing the king's policies. And then there's Philip. He's mentioned as connected to the cave burnings in some versions and translations.
Okay,
which I think we read about him, Philip.
Sounds familiar.
Because I always think of him as Prince Philip from Sleeping Beauty.
Okay.
You know, that's the prince's name in that story.
Right.
The locations. We had a hard time keeping up with locations in the first 5 chapters, so I try to track them in these next 5.
Sure.
In chapter 6, we're in Jerusalem. We're in the temple in Jerusalem. We're in Mount Gerizim, which is the Samaritan sanctuary area.
Okay.
And the nearby caves and hills, you know, where they partied hard.
Right.
Okay. Here's how 2 Maccabees overlaps with 1 Maccabees for chapter 6.
Okay.
Mostly this chapter overlaps with 1 Maccabees chapter 1, verses 41 through 64. Okay, we've got Antiochus' decrees. We've got the banning of Torah observance, the defiling of the sanctuary, the forcing of pagan sacrifice, the mothers killed for circumcision, and the faithful people fleeing into the wilderness and the caves.
Okay.
Like, it was told differently, especially, right. Like, they described it more as in the wilderness in 1 Maccabees.
Yeah.
Whereas it's more caves and shit like that in 2 Maccabees.
Right.
So I'm glad I studied it because I didn't realize like that was the same. Like, I'm really bad at making connections. So like wilderness equals cave.
Right.
Just so you know.
The cave was probably in the wilderness, you know.
So. Yeah, exactly. So the difference is we already know. First Maccabees gives more the political and historical summary, whereas Second Maccabees gives more of the moral horror and the martyrdom and the theology, that right. kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That shows up really big in chapter 6.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as how Second Maccabees chapter 6 compares to the Old Testament and the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
Which, you know, those are the same thing.
Yep.
The book of Daniel, chapter 7 through 12, is all over this. Like, this is that same kind of thing with the arrogant pagan king, the persecution of the faithful, and the desecration of the sanctuary.
Okay.
Like, that is so the same.
Right, right.
Okay. Especially Daniel, chapter 3, verse 31, he talks about abomination that desolates. That's the classic parallel that you'll see come up again and again
okay.
when we're comparing these two. Abomination that desolates.
Okay.
Because it's like complete, like abomination meaning like, you know, desecrating the temple. It's sure. an abomination.
Yeah.
And it desolates, meaning, you know, unto depression. Like, got it's it. Just horrid. Like, everything about this is a horrible time period.
Yeah.
So, also, the comparison is Eleazar feels a lot like what you would see in the wisdom books where, you know, like Job and stuff like that. Like, okay. not the histories, not the...
God, I just don't think I've ever heard you refer to them as the wisdom books before. Maybe I'm wrong.
I have.
Okay.
I have. Well,
I just... They're the I don't, different... I didn't recall it. I'm sorry.
It's the different parts of the way the Jewish Bible is broken down. Like, there's the Ketuvim and... You know, there's the histories, there's the wisdom books, there's the dudes, the
prophets.
I wanted to say yeah. philosophers, and I was like, no, that's wrong. Prophets. Right. And, you know, the wisdom books are the ones that aren't either the prophets or the histories. They're the ones that are just, like, trying to teach you something.
Got it.
So, like, Job is the biggest example of a wisdom book.
Sure, sure.
But Eleazar feels like it's one of those.
Yeah.
With his righteous suffering of traditions.
Sure.
And later on how we like see Daniel's faithfulness under empire, like Eleazar echoes that.
Yeah.
So that's all chapter 6.
Okay.
Chapter 7 is totally the mom and the seven brothers.
Okay. Yeah.
That whole chapter.
Yeah.
So the mother and the seven sons are tortured to death for refusing pork. And the major text for resurrection of the righteous appears in this chapter, which is really crazy.
Okay.
Like, resurrection at all is just like,
yeah.
What are you even, like, that's a Christian. Why are we talking about this?
Right.
But it comes up, and it's just really weird. This is one of the most famous martyrdom stories, like, even more famous than Eleazar.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a whole fucking chapter about them getting fried and
yeah.
tongues pulled. I mean, like,
yeah.
it's very graphic.
It's grotesque.
Yeah.
Yeah. The seven brothers and their mother are arrested. They're forced by Antiochus IV to eat pork. They yeah. refuse one by one. Each son is tortured horribly and killed in front of the others. And the mother encourages each of them one at a time as they go out to be tortured to stay faithful,
yeah.
even knowing... Even having seen what happened to the one before him.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible. It's fucking terrible.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Each death becomes a theological speech, which is that it's better to die than to violate the Torah. God will raise up the righteous. Limbs lost now will be restored later in the afterlife.
Look, again, any god that promotes right? this kind of shit can fuck right off.
He can fuck right off. Yeah. The king will face judgment. You're supposed to believe that. Not just believe it, but like take it as fact.
Honestly,
it's a fact.
I don't give a shit.
Right. I don't either. I'm not getting tortured. I'm just
right.
not.
Yeah.
Fuck you. And suffering can be for the sake of the people. Like what you're doing here is not just on you. You're taking the suffering for the people.
I guarantee there was at least 100, maybe 1,000, maybe 2,000. 100,000 people that decided to not go into the frying pan.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
this is, you're making a bad choice here.
No, I totally agree. what that made me think of when I read that line, because it came up again and again in my notes covering these chapters, suffering for the sake of all the people. It made me think of the book The Giver, where one person is chosen to take on all of the feeling or all of the sins, like to be the scapegoat.
Yeah.
You know, to be the one that takes all the suffering.
Right.
So that everybody else can go free.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to like feel, instead of like being sad, oh, my finger just got cut off. Oh, that hurts. That sucks.
Yeah.
You're supposed to feel proud and strong. Like, I'm taking this for the group. That I am doing this means that I'm saving my entire group. Like, it's to turn torture and suffering into a thing to be proud of.
And I suppose if I viscerally felt like, if I knew that to be the case, right? Like, that'd be a different story. But like, I can't, you're everything about religion is taking it on faith. It's not, there's nothing that you can tangibly put your finger on and say, ah, this is definitely going to happen, because there's never a point that has ever been covered. With like, even people the most faithful say you have to have faith. You have to believe it from this certain perspective to understand things, right? There's never been anything tangible that I've heard somebody say that is like, this is definitely a reason to go get fried up in a frying pan by somebody. You know, like, no, there's no fucking reason for that.
No.
And you couldn't convince me that there's any reason for that.
I mean, even like, okay, there's a part in the book 1984 where they break you down and they make you admit and even believe to things that aren't true, such as that 2 + 2 = 5. Right. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. They want you, the government in the book wants you to say it, because then it's not that you'll believe everything or anything. It's that you will stop fighting.
Yeah.
You've given up. It's a breaking. And so even math is not something, and I love math. Like, the whole point of religion is to believe in something that's greater than yourself, right?
Sure.
Is to find faith and find strength in something that's larger than yourself, that you belong to something bigger than you, right?
Sure.
And the only thing that even slightly comes close to that to me is math. I find just the fact that math, there's always a correct answer. I might not be able to solve the problem, but there is a right answer.
Yeah.
It is there.
Right.
It, like, 2 + 2 = 4, assholes.
Sure.
It's not 5.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about fucking quantum physics and imaginary numbers. I'm talking about like your solid fucking math, right? It's very reliable. It's very solid. And that's why I like it so much. It's logical and it makes sense. But even at that, I don't have a spiritual connection to the point that if I'm about to be fried up, like, I would have no problem being like, yeah, okay, 2 + 2 = 5. What the fuck ever,
right.
Whatever makes you not fry me for dinner is fine.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care that much.
Right.
Like, I get what the book was trying to imply, and I get why it was a big deal when he finally did say 2 + 2 = 5.
Well, you know what else gets you to stop fighting? Death.
Right. Exactly.
I'm just saying, like, you can't fight if you're dead.
Exactly.
So,
live to fight another day, my guy.
Right.
Like, make 2 + 2 = 4 tomorrow.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't know. I guess I'm a weak-minded person because I just don't believe in anything hard enough to be willing to die for it like that.
I don't think that has anything to do with weak-mindedness. I think that, honestly, the thing that gets these people to, you know, sacrifice themselves for the whatever greater good or whatever the fuck it is propaganda. It's fucking, they've been blinded by God and the pitch for God to the point where they're willing to die for it. Like, this is the same thing that, like, It doesn't, we don't understand like suicide bombers, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's not something that really resonates with people in the United States, because it's not something that we would be willing to do.
No, right? Not at all.
At least not for the most part anyway.
Right. And I mean, there's some fucking crazy fundamentalist Christians out there that maybe would take up that cause.
Absolutely. But it does take a next level of brainwashing to get to that point where you believe that your sacrifice is so great and so worthwhile that it is worth losing your own life over.
Like, honestly, whom's the fuck do you think you are that you matter that much? I guess, is my question. But, I mean, it's like the trolley problem, but if I'm on the track and I'm the one choosing,
right?
Like, if there's the trolley problem, okay, so just for those who don't know, the trolley problem is this common philosophical debate of there's a train going down the track, there's three people on the track, and it's going to kill those three people. If you can hit a button to make it go on the other track, and instead of killing those three people, it'll only hit, say, a dog, would you do it? Well, the answer is probably automatically, yeah. I mean, that's sad. That I hate the idea of losing the dog, but
sure.
And then it progresses. Okay, but what if instead of it's a dog, it's one person? Oh, that's rough because it's still killing a person, which is bad, but at least I would be saving the two people. So sure. Yeah, I would do it, right? So it's like it progresses because then it asks you to make these moral decisions. And it's not a judgment question. It's a discussion of where do your morals lie?
Where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
And that question is easy to ask when you're not tied to the track and you get to decide for somebody else.
Yeah.
What this asks you to do in this story is to both be the person that pushes the button, but also to be the one tied on the track.
Yeah.
And moreover, to be the one driving the train.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be all three of those at the same time, and that doesn't make sense to me.
The brainwashing that gets somebody there is immense.
Right.
You know, like, you had to have been next level taught that this is so important that it's worth your own life.
Right.
And your kids' lives and everything. You know, like, it's worth everything.
And then, you know, the questions then get asked, okay, so did somebody set the train in motion on purpose? Because then if I just absolve myself from all responsibility, then it's on the person who maliciously did it. Yeah. By abstaining from choosing, am I then still responsible for the murder of the three rather than the dog? Or is it the person who set the train in motion and tied the people to the track?
Right.
Like, I don't know. The whole question is stupid and pointless because I don't want to die and I don't want to kill other people.
Right.
So I don't know how. Anyway, continuing with chapter 7, the mother watches all fucking 7 of her kids die.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she dies herself because she likes trains or something like that.
Right.
And God's a dick.
Yeah.
This chapter is a huge fucking deal because it contains one of the clearest pre-Christian Jewish expressions of bodily resurrection, future vindication of martyrs, and divine judgment on tyrants, because they talk about all of that in this chapter.
Yeah.
They talk about that they will be repaired in the afterlife. Like, their death is not for naught, you know?
Yeah.
That they are being martyred and they will be vindicated.
Now, we talked a lot about it in one of our recent special episodes where this time period is where they started doing a lot more of this type of talk and this type of, you know, we're angling towards that New Testament, you know, feeling.
Right. Right now, we're just like right in that. I'm really glad we decided to read 1st and 2nd Maccabees because this does fill the between the Old Testament and New Testament
gap somewhat. Right.
And then, you know, we filled in some of the rest of the gap with our Tuesday special deep dive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this falls right in there. Like, all of this is the pot that's stirring and brewing pre-Jesus.
Yeah.
This is what Jesus is born into, this crazy world of Greek rulership saying, "Stop being Jewish, God damn it." And Rome then taking over and saying, "I mean, it's kind of cool, I guess, but I don't know. This Jesus guy seems, I mean, but no, we don't like him either. I don't fucking know."
Right.
It's all a mess. And we also said on Tuesday that there was this expectation, not that when will God save us, but, oh, God is coming for sure.
Yeah.
He is going to save us because he always does.
Right.
And that's what Jesus is born into.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the seven brothers, explicitly says that the king may kill them now, but, quote, "the king of the universe will raise us up to renewed life."
Mm.
Yeah. And I forgot about it until I read that and I was like, oh shit, he did. I forgot. We made a big deal. We're like, oh, the king of the universe, huh? Okay. And then another one of them says that he expects to receive back the hands and tongue that he lost, you know, in the afterlife. Yeah. He will be repaired as he was before.
Right.
And it's not just vague immortality language. Like, this is very
specific. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very resurrection-ish. Like, this is where we're going.
Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds good because these people are suffering. They are suffering for their religion and for their faith, and they are choosing to, and there has to be a reason for it.
Right.
They've got to have a reason for being killed for circumcising their child.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to have a reason for having circumcised their child in the first place.
Yeah. It's the matter. It's what you're justifying, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, why would you do this if you're not willing to martyr yourself? Like, right. Why would you do these things if you don't think that there's some payoff in the afterlife or whatever, you know?
Well, we talked about cults in the Tuesday before, and we talked about sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah.
Like, we've been doing this for thousands of years, and so there has to be a payoff. And we've been trying to make other people understand why we do this for thousands of years and, you know, steal their land while we're at it and take their slaves while we're at it.
Not doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, there has to be a reason for it.
Yeah.
So they're looking for it. And this is where we head into the New Testament.
No, you obviously have to sacrifice yourself, or it's just not worth all of this.
You were killed for no reason.
Right.
And who wants to, what's that book about?
Yeah.
You know, that's just Gone Girl. The main characters in chapter 7 are Antiochus, the fourth Epiphanes again.
Yep.
The mother of the seven sons. There are some texts that suggest various names, but they are very difficult to pronounce, and I didn't catch them, so I didn't take those down, FYI.
Okay.
And the seven brothers, who are unnamed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's no specific location that pins down where this happened that's named in this chapter, but it's somewhere within the sphere of the Seleucid persecution, so somewhere in Judea, Jerusalem, that kind of thing. Yeah. And there is no overlap with First Maccabees. This is a very second Maccabees chapter.
Yeah.
A very special chapter.
It was very special.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was chapter 7.
Yeah.
Chapter 8, Judas Maccabeus starts hitting back.
Yeah.
Like Return of the Jedi.
Sure.
You know, sorry. I had those wrong. I was thinking The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Sure.
And I made the titles go together because I'm not the Star Wars geek I would be, you know?
Right.
I want to be better than I am. At least I recognize the difference between the two. There are some people that will literally, like, you'll say something about Spock or whatever, and then they'll say Star Wars.
Mm.
And then, like, when you are like, you mean Star Trek? They literally will be like, whatever, I'm not really a fan of either. And I don't understand those people, quite honestly. Because you don't have to be a big fan. What
planet did you live on?
Seriously, like, what do you mean you've never heard of the movie Dirty Dancing? The fuck? Like, you don't know what Ghostbusters is? I'm not saying you had to see it 100 times and, like, no quotes from it, but you don't know what it's about? Literally, you've never heard the song?
Right.
Like, come on. Yeah. Don't be that guy. So in chapter 8, Judas Maccabeus organizes resistance, wins key battles against the Seleucid commanders, and he starts taking names.
Yeah.
Okay. He's coming back big.
Sure.
Okay. So here is where we enter the resistance proper. Okay.
Okay.
Judas and his companions, they gather up some faithful Jews. They recruit those who remain loyal. They build a force of about 6,000. And they do a lot of praying. They pray for the oppressed people. They pray for their desecrated temple.
Yeah.
They pray for their ruined city, the innocent bloodshed. And they most of all pray for divine justice.
Unless you consult Maccabees chapter, or the book, First Maccabees, then they didn't pray at all.
Right. Well, so. I mean, just because they didn't mention it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
No, I know.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. But in this chapter of Second Maccabees, they pray most of all for divine justice.
Sure.
Above all else.
Yeah.
Then, as soon as they're done praying, Judas launches his guerrilla warfare.
Yeah.
He does surprise attacks. He burns enemy outposts. he starts taking strategic positions and growing morale. So things are going well. He gives this huge, big pep talk that the outcome depends not on the size of your dick or your army, but on God.
Right.
He's like, it doesn't matter that there's only three of us here at this pep rally. We're going to win.
Right.
Yeah. So there's then the battle against Nicanor. And remember, I decided to call this guy Gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know if it's Gorgias or Gorgias.
Yeah.
So I just call him Gorgeous. So Nicanor and Gorgeous, there's this whole campaign against them. Okay, and they're the Seleucids, which are pre-Greek, like they're Greek guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So a Seleucid response forms under generals Nicanor and Gorgeous, as well as Lysias. He's the major Seleucid official behind many of the Seleucid campaigns.
Okay.
So when I say that Nicanor and Gorgeous had this shit going, sometimes it was one of them, sometimes it was the other, and sometimes it was under Lysias, whatever, and sometimes it wasn't.
Got it.
So it was them three in various combinations.
Okay.
There's even talk of selling captured Jews into slavery before the battle because they just assume victory.
That's right. Well, and they were raising money
for, for their big, huge army fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, what? And Judas is like, well, no, that's not fucking happening on my watch. Absolutely fucking not.
Right.
So the Jews pray and they fight and they win decisively because, you know, God's got them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Not because they fought hard, not because they like had something worth fighting for. No, the morale was there.
It's all God.
Let's keep in mind, too, that the Greek army, the Seleucids, were several different forces of conscripted people from various nations. Right.
Yeah.
Because this had all been happening under Alexander the Great prior to the Seleucid generals, right? So they were all conquering various nations, whereas the Jews are like, but we just Jewish. We won. We're one team. Even though we're now spread out among various nations, we are still one fucking team and we are defending ourselves.
Yeah.
And so they had a different type of morale. So yeah, their numbers were smaller, but they had something worth fighting for. So let's not, you know, discount their enthusiasm level.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But part of their winning decisively meant that enemy forces were, routed. Damn it. Routed. I can never remember if it's routed or routed. And there was this huge plundering thing that happened. Like they, you know, went on plundering.
Yeah.
Like that was bad. They did that.
Yeah.
They were like, we won. And also I want all your gold and your slaves and your kids and your donkeys. Gimme.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the good news is that the Sabbath was honored after victory.
Hey, so gotta look at the bright side.
All that looting, we can overlook the looting because
Sabbath.
Because Sabbath.
Yeah.
Right. The spoils also, we can look at the fact that they were distributed to widows, orphans, the elderly, and others that were harmed by persecution. They're damn near Robin Hood. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably how they felt about themselves.
Sure.
Like, oh, we got to get all this gold to give to the needy.
Right.
I'm sure nobody pocketed anything. The main characters in this chapter are Judas Maccabeus, a.k.a. Judah the Hammer. That was his nickname.
Was it really?
For real, yeah. Wow. Judah the Hammer.
That's funny.
Judas's companions, the faithful Jews, and then from the Seleucid side, Nicanor, Gorgias, and Lysias.
Okay.
The locations in this chapter, we had various villages and the wilderness areas in and around Judea. Jerusalem, which is still under threat and partly in enemy hands, depending on what stage of the fight we're talking about.
Yeah.
Various battle zones around Judea. And some translations mention Emmaus-like campaigns in context with overlapping First Maccabees.
Okay.
So mostly just Jerusalem, Judea area.
Right.
Okay. Where this overlaps with First Maccabees is chapters 3 verses 38 through chapter 4 verses 25.
Okay.
Where Lysias appoints commanders, like that, just various commanders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nicanor and Gorgias are two of the ones named.
Okay.
That are involved.
All right.
The enemy expects an easy victory and even prepares slave traders and assumes Jewish enslavement. So that happened in 1 Maccabees as well.
Okay.
Judas rallies the people. The surprise night movement by Judas, that happened in 1 Maccabees.
Okay.
Gorgias misses Judas in camp. That happened in both.
Okay.
And the Seleucid forces panic and are defeated. So that happened in both books.
Got it.
Okay, the Old Testament, there's small faithful force versus a stronger army. So just that lesson in general.
Yeah.
There's a David versus Goliath logic that victory will occur not by numbers, but by worth.
Okay.
In 2 Chronicles, we saw holy war theology, like pray, trust God, and then win.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
Right.
Not specific events, just the comparison and the tone
right.
is what I'm talking about here. And one thing that gets repeated, such as in 1 Samuel, is the battle belongs to the Lord. That's a phrase that got tossed around in the Old Testament a lot. And then we see that show up in 2 Maccabees.
Sure.
So
yeah.
That specific phrase.
Okay.
The battle belongs to the Lord.
Right.
Interesting. Right. So in chapter 9, that's Antiochus IV dies a nasty theatrical comical death.
Yes, he does.
A comic book villain death.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible.
It was terrible, but also grotesquely and funny.
Yeah, no, we had fun with that one.
Yeah, yeah. It's a prime example of ancient revenge literature. Basically, when he dies, it's like God is judging him so fucking hard. No, he judged him
so fucking hard.
Yeah.
No, he didn't just die. He
went big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Antiochus IV, still raging against Jerusalem, like leading up to his death.
Yeah.
He's struck by God. Yeah, he gets sudden internal pain, bowel agony, meaning his butthole hurts.
Sure.
His chariot crashes, his body is broken, he gets worms and his flesh starts rotting off.
Yeah.
There's an unbearable stench. I forgot about how he'd be gassing it up.
we joked that he might have been pushed off the chariot.
Yeah. Because like, he was farting so much.
Stinking so bad.
Yeah. Basically he suffers total humiliation before he dies of all these terrible ailments.
Right, right.
So it's basically like God is saying, you're going to desecrate my shit? Okay, stand aside, hold my beer and watch what happens because your insides are about to be a fucking allegory. And that happened. He finally, as he's dying with the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out.
Yeah.
He finally loses his arrogance and he kind of sort of acknowledges God and right. is like, whoa, you're so strong.
Yeah.
And as he's dying, again, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, and he's like, pass me a pen. And he writes a letter promising freedom and benefits to the Jews, honor for the temple, and he even becomes a benefactor. But what I recall most of all happening is him saying, and also, please don't be mad at my son when he takes over.
Like, if this actually did happen, that was the reason.
That was the takeaway.
Not anything else.
Yeah. But it was too late. He died miserably in foreign territory.
Sure.
The main characters were Antiochus IV Epiphanes.
Yeah.
The messengers and attendants who probably died of fart stank.
Right.
And the Jews as the people he tried to crush.
Yeah.
The location is on the road. He's on campaign, heading toward and thinking about Jerusalem.
Yeah.
In the east, there's foreign territory that during his last days, he talks about, like, this is all happening during his fall.
Okay.
So, 2 Maccabees compresses his end somewhat differently than other literatures do. So there's... This guy existed, and he died, just maybe not this way.
Yeah.
He did die abroad, though.
Okay.
Just not necessarily with gas.
Yeah, might not have,
and worms.
Right.
As far as, like, how this compares to 1 Maccabees, both agree that Antiochus hears bad news, he gets distressed, he falls ill, he recognizes that his suffering is connected to what he did in Jerusalem, and he dies.
Okay.
That's how they agree on what happened.
Okay.
The difference is obviously First Maccabee's much more restrained. He's depressed.
Yeah.
He's a little sick. He kind of regrets his actions and then he dies.
Sure. The end. Sure.
Second Maccabee's is so much more graphic and grotesque. Like, we get divine punishment is explicit. The body horror, like, there should be a fucking movie about this scene alone.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephen King wishes, you know, this is so nasty. And his repentance, I mean, was it repentance? Again, I don't, it was definitely insincere at best.
I feel like it was just about his son.
It was about his son at that point. Yeah.
I mean, and look, that's just me placing my feelings into this, but like, that's how I feel about it.
That's the biggest part of it to me as well. We mostly get like an echo of the theme from many of the wisdom books in the Old Testament. Pride goes before destruction. Pride goes before the fall, kind of thing.
Right.
And you will see a little bit of that in like Pharaoh in Egypt or Sennacherib.
Bible loves these messages where the
big bad
desserts,
king.
You know,
yeah. So. The big bad king is the meanest ever. And he's like your comic book mustache twirling evil bad guy. He's just fucking the worst. And then he dies like so hard.
Right, right.
Yeah. So in chapter 10, we've got the temple purified, Hanukkah's origin, and then more war.
Got it.
Because war.
Yeah.
You know? So the temple gets rededicated because, you know, yay, Antiochus Epiphanes is dead.
Sure.
Awesome. So the temple gets rededicated. They celebrate their 8 days. And that's the origin of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
And then war continues under Antiochus V Eupator.
Right.
Okay. So basically, chapter 10 is about the temple and Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Okay. They tear down the pagan altars and shrines. Yay. They purify the sanctuary. They throw blood on the right corners
or whatever.
Yeah. They build a new altar. They relight lamps. They burn incense. They restore the bread of the presence.
They brought the showbread.
They got their showbread.
Yeah, right.
And they resume sacrifice after a long interruption.
Yeah.
They celebrate 8 days, like just like they did for the Feast of Booths way back in, like, what was that? Leviticus?
Something like that.
Because they had recently been hiding in the mountains and caves during the real festival.
Right.
So they couldn't do the thing. So, you know, they're like, okay, now we get to really party.
Yeah.
Like, not just party because it's that time of year, but also party because that time of year and we're free.
Right.
And we won. And we're about to go try to rule the world.
Yeah.
That's where we get like the branches and the palms and the festival rejoicing.
Yeah.
And they decree that all Jews should celebrate this every year. And they still do.
They do. Yeah. Yeah.
This is the core biblical basis for Hanukkah. Or I'm sorry, Hanukkah.
Right.
I don't know how to say it correctly. So it sounds like I'm playing dress up and being rude when I try. And that's why I don't try.
Right.
Kind of like challah bread.
Sure.
They're bread. Like, yeah. I sound rude when I'm trying.
Right. Sounds like you're trying to.
It sounds like I'm making fun.
Right.
And like, I just don't know the accent. I don't know the language. I don't speak Hebrew.
Sure.
So it feels rude to me. I feel like I'm being rude. That's what I mean to say. That's my long, really long-winded way of apologizing for how I said it.
Sure.
The text explicitly says they instituted an annual 8-day observance. Like, it's law per Second Maccabees. Like, it's mentioned in First Maccabees, but Second Maccabees is like, just so you know, for realsies, this is the fucking law, y'all.
Yeah.
Which is just so funny to me since it's like not even part of the Tanakh, you know?
Yeah.
It's not part of the Hebrew Bible.
Right, right.
After the rededication notice, the chapter 10 pivots back to the military campaigns under Eupator. That's Antiochus IV Epiphanes' son.
Okay.
And Lysias, that general from, you know, back when.
Yeah.
You know, with the gorgeous and the Nicanor.
The Seleucid
general guys.
Yeah.
Ptolemy Macron tries to treat the Jews more fairly, but then he dies by suicide after some political backlash. So that didn't work out well for him.
Right.
Gorgeous continues his hostility because he's like, nah, fuck that. The Idumeans hold strongholds and harass the Jews, and Judas attacks places like Idumea, strongholds such as in Hebron, Jamnia, and Jebna, which is an area that's like in broader campaigns. Joppa and coastal related reprisals are developed. Like, there's more war coming in future chapters. The main characters in chapter 10 are Judas Maccabeus, his followers, Eupator, Lysias, Ptolemy Macron, and Gorgias, and the Idumeans.
Okay,
we don't see Nicanor. I think Nicanor is dead at this point.
Right.
The locations are Jerusalem, the temple and sanctuary, Judea, Idumea, and possibly Hebron, nearby fortresses, and other contested regional sites.
Okay.
But they're not specifically named. It's more like taken out of taken from context.
Yeah.
That were like probably around theirs.
Right.
Like somewhere over there, you know.
Yeah.
The ways that this chapter overlaps with First Maccabees is that in both books, Judas does decide to cleanse the sanctuary. The temple is found desolate. The altar is dismantled and replaced. The sacrifices are restored. There is an 8-day celebration, and there is an annual commemoration established. So that happens in both First and Second Maccabees.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
That's the clearest parallel.
I do remember that we talked about Hanukkah starting in the First Maccabees.
Oh, yeah, so definitely.
It was definitely something
like that. Yeah.
So
they didn't call it that. It was like
Right. It was just a celebration for rededicating the temple and whatever.
And then we did a Q&A and we're like, oh, shit.
That's Hanukkah.
Yeah, that's right. Hanukkah. That's fucking Hanukkah.
Yeah.
I remember being so offended. Like, this is fucking Hanukkah. This is like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Jewish holidays. And it's not even in their Bible. What? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand it. But this chapter 10 is the clearest parallel in this whole thing so far.
Yeah.
What's really fun is that there's this little discrepancy in when the time period between the desecration and the rededication.
Yeah.
In Second Maccabees, it says that sacrifice resumed after 2 years, but in First Maccabees, it was more like 3 years.
Got it.
So the historical one is like, it was 3 years or so.
Yeah.
But the God one was like, no, it was only 2 years, motherfucker. God is awesome. And everybody's like, okay, I guess. Yeah. But a lot of historians point out that discrepancy because they're like, y'all, like these books don't line up exactly. And yeah, it's only a 1 year like discrepancy, but it does kind of make the God one a little more questionable than it was with its magic.
I don't know exactly when this book was written, but it definitely was not written in the same time period.
Not at all.
Right.
No, this one was written several hundred years after the first one was.
Yeah, and it's very obvious.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. You could tell what time period it's in because of the language, because of all the resurrection stuff.
Yeah.
And it's well more, come on, Jews, let's get it together. Let's be Jewish together. Come on, rally around the God, you know?
Yeah.
This chapter is drenched in Old Testament Hebrew Bible stuff. Like tones, like the whole temple restoration motif is all Old Testament, you know?
Yeah.
We get some Ezra Nehemiah vibes with the purifying worship and the restoring cult.
Sure.
All of that stuff. Hezekiah and Josiah with their reform vibes.
Yeah.
Like we see that a lot here, removing illicit altars and talking about like all of the hard partying that was done, you know, with the trees and the caves and all of that. Like that is so uncool, you know. The imagery from Leviticus and Deuteronomy where they describe the original Feast of Booths.
Yeah.
I'm horrible with pronunciations, but whatever, suck it.
Yeah.
Whatever that holiday is called.
Right.
There's imagery from that in Leviticus and Deuteronomy that develops into what becomes Hanukkah.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
The dedication of the sacred space echoes the tabernacle as well as later on Solomon's temple.
Okay.
So, like, it's all very cyclical and, like, let's borrow those vibes.
Yeah.
And then the branches and palms feels festal and triumphal in a way that later Jewish memory absolutely latches onto.
Okay.
And that later early Christians will be latching onto.
Got it.
Like, I mean, branches and palms. Like,
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah. This whole five chapters, and really 1 through 10, all so far has done nothing but further back up the fact that First Maccabees was a military and political resistance story.
Yeah.
Like, just telling the history of what happened, whereas Second Maccabees is also resistance, but with, like, the martyr theology, the suffering, the resurrection hope, and the moral stories, and the why. And not just what happened, but why it matters.
Well, it's something I would be really interested in when we do wrap up Second Maccabees, is finding out, like, when this does happen in time, when it was written.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like a lot, like in a lot of the books that we've read, when they get all martyry and, like, mm-hmm. you know, bringing their God into their books a lot, they're usually recalling something from the past and relating it to the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like with regard to, like, the Babylonian exile and stuff.
Exactly.
Like that, right? Like, when there's some invading force that's threatening their people,
when they're trying,
like,
to rally.
Let's rally the troops and let's bring them back through these God wordings and, like, all these things,
like,
right?
Let's readopt the Leviticus rule days in order to remember our roots so that we can be one people again.
So to me, it would be very interesting to find out when it was written, because I would imagine that it lines up very closely with, like, the Roman incursion
mm-hmm.
to the Jewish lands and things
like that. I'm almost positive.
So.
Like, we did cover that when I started this book, and I'm almost positive that's when it was written.
Sure.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah, no, it does to me too. Like, because it sounds in line with other things we've heard from other times when other people tried to conquer them or did conquer them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and because we're getting closer and closer to the resurrection stories.
Yeah, well, the stuff that sounds very similar to New Testament type themes
mm-hmm.
are very prevalent in this book as well.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that was a good recap and made me think a lot about, like, how this all kind of ties in. So
I think this, on the heels of the Tuesday deep dive into the time period.
Yeah.
Like, helps bring home, oh, yeah, this is what we're reading about.
Right.
Like, it really is helping me gear up and get ready for when we finish. We've got 5 more chapters now of Second Maccabees. And then, you know, we've got, like,
regular wrap up stuff.
We've got a regular wrap up. And I think I'll try to do a You're Always Wrong.
Mm, okay.
With combining First and Second Maccabees to the whole rest of the Old Testament.
Okay.
And then I think we'll probably do, like, one more just, like, brief, when did these guys start? Who are these guys?
Yeah.
Like, just a brief intro, not too deep divey, because we don't know them yet.
Yeah.
And then I think we'll start, and think it'll be like maybe 2 or 3 weeks we'll be starting the New Testament.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. And I'm,
like, I hadn't been excited up until this point. I had been dreading it up until this point.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting psyched for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, me too. All right. Do you have anything else for us on this?
I think that's it.
Okay.
I think that's more than enough.
I mean, we've got an hour in on this, and I think we covered quite a bit. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Second Maccabees, chapters 6 through 10 Q&A.
Sure as fuck was.
Wife is jumping the gun here. And we will be back soon with
Second Macadoodles, chapter 11.
There you go. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.